In the 21st chapter of Revelation, the same thing is said that Isaiah said 700 years earlier. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. When Isaiah had that revelation, it is assumed by the readers of the Bible that it then happened 700 years later to John. But that isn't the case. It happened when Isaiah saw it. And John simply came to the attention of the public 700 years later. Time was never any different for Isaiah than it is for us. The only difference being that he was out of time when he saw it and when he said it. And he was reporting what was current then out of time. It just came to our attention 700 years later. That's what a prophet is. Someone who's in the now, seeing what is in the now. And then we who live in time, seeing it not in the now, see it as many years later as we do see it. Jesus Christ was on the earth when he made this statement. And when he made the statement, he had attained awareness of something that the earth could not contain. He had seen through the illusion. He lived in the reality. He lived in the new heaven, which was new only to those who hadn't seen it, which means that man thought a new heaven had been discovered. But it was the living place, the abode of those who had found the Father before. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God, out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. This was the appearance to John. When new consciousness takes over, we are wedded to the bride. The soul meets the bride. The spirit and the soul are wedded. In this new consciousness, all of the hopes and plans and dreams and statements in the Bible become a fact. We are reunited with the universe of God. We are out of the mortal dream. We are in immortality, in life which has no ending. This is the breakup of the illusion for us, as it was for Christ Jesus, as it was later for John. It is our hope of glory to be in that breakup of the illusion. A while ago, we had another illusion on this island. It would seem that the world was tossed around, the land was devastated, some lives were lost. Everyone was in a state of turmoil. How many recognize an illusion? I don't know. And then in my hometown, in Kauai, the same thing. Another state of illusion. ...150-mile winds devastated the city. We don't even know what's happening there. But we do know one thing. Only God is there. Those wandering in the illusion of human life, as most of us had for centuries, suddenly could be transported if they were where John is. But they're worried about the material things of life. They're worried about their children, their husbands, their families. Very few are aware that they are looking at the dream world being dismantled. It's difficult in the midst of such confusion to know that you're in the midst of a dream. Sometimes the dream is smooth, sometimes it's rough, but it's always a dream. And in a sense, I feel that in a manner, we are being prepared for the change in consciousness. Just as you see the difficult times when food doesn't come to an island or food doesn't come to a city, thousands are homeless, relief flown in, 90 people couldn't get off our island without aid, hospitals were emptied, moved to another city. We are going through the same thing in this world of reality. In what we think is reality, we are learning that things cannot be controlled. There's nothing you can do about it. Suddenly the ground is ripped up. The air is alive with tension. And you are called upon to know that this is your sense illusion. Whether it's smooth or rough. And it hits you strongly that this is only a preparation, because when you have overcome this sense illusion, you've much further to go. After you put your house back in order, you get your insurance paid off, you get the faucets working, you get the phone company installing this and that, you're right in the same illusion anyway. It's just that it's a little more convenient. But if you know you're in the illusion, then you're prepared to come out of the illusion, as John is prepared in this 21st chapter. He didn't have to have the world thrown up around him, confusion in the air, people in pain. He suddenly was brought to the point of utter visibility, seeing past the whole human illusion to a new earth and a new heaven, and his feet were still planted on this earth. That is the point of it. While your feet are still planted on the earth, you won't be seeing the kind of an illusion that comes with wind blowing, things flying through the air. You'll see an illusion that everyone thinks is normal, but you won't. And there will be a day when you will emerge from that illusion, when you can almost feel your possible emergence. And suddenly it's lifted. The illusion for you is not there. You have come into a new state of being. You don't see flesh. You're looking straight at what once was flesh, but you don't see it. Your new vision cannot comprehend or see flesh. Your senses don't record flesh. Your senses don't record anything in the universe that you once were there in a universe that could give you something or take from you. You don't find anything like that. Your new level of perception cannot see weather. Your new level of perception cannot see people. You're looking straight at them as you once did, but you cannot see their forms. You have been lifted into incorporeality. And I know that we have not been lifted into incorporeality at this date. But if we can believe God and Jesus, we're going to be lifted into incorporeality. There's no point of this demonstration, which has taken 250,000 years to get to our attention. There's no point of that demonstration if it's not meant to be. And I, for one, look forward to the day when we are looking at the world and there are no oceans. It says here there's no sun in the sky, there's no need of a moon. And there isn't any, it says, in this chapter. Can you imagine looking at the sun and the moon and it isn't there? You can't see it, because it never was there except to human beings. Well, this is the far out that we're coming to. And maybe you say, well, that's so far away, why do we talk about it now? If you think it's far away, it will be. If you think it's close for you or someone you know, chances are it will be. I know when Joel left this plane, it was very close to Joel. And when others who have been enlightened have left this plane, it was very close to them. When they were on this plane, they could see what was in store for them. And it's hard to realize that the world has come to a place where it's no longer something to read about in a book. It's something that's happening right outside on your doorstep. It's coming to that. Otherwise, God has been saying a lot of things in the Bible that you have not heard. It's clear from what we have seen that you and I have been preparing, carefully preparing. In every incarnation, we continue that preparation. We are preparing for the day when the fourth world, which is the day of man and woman, is no more. And when man and woman are seen in their true light, and many will walk this earth seeing man and woman as other men and women won't see them. You'll walk right past an individual who is seeing man and woman a different way, and he will not be visible to you. Maybe you didn't think you'd come to that day, but you're coming to it swiftly. We live in a world that is changing rapidly, and the changes are only in the illusion. The truth is becoming visible and tangible to those who are in the truth. And the speed of it is so swift that it really makes your head swim. Now, I'd like you to feel that you're in the tempo, you're in the flow. You're not sitting still and idle and wondering about what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. And you know it comes suddenly. You know it's nothing but a deep joy, because it happens quickly. And it happens to an individual, and then another individual. It doesn't come in groups. Each individual finds himself lifted. And now is the time to be ready. To be ready to see with the inner eye when it happens. It's nothing you control. You don't press a button. But you look out and you see reality. The child of God sees reality. And it doesn't look like the things we are looking at. There's a lot of passages in here about the 12 stones. The first thing that happens is you see that Jacinth, what it amounts to is that the world becomes a transparency. You're looking at a world and now it's not there because it's transparent to you. It didn't go anywhere. You just see right through it. Your vision is developed to that level where you can see through the world. It's hard to imagine, but you may as well know that is what you're going to do. You look right through flesh, you look right through steel, you look through anything in the world. And that's what Jesus did. The Christ. You can have a sense of deep gratitude for the you that you are, even though you don't appear to be that yet. Because someday you will look at things that you cannot see right now, and you'll look right through them at things that you will see. And you'll understand why the Bible has been telling us that we are as perfect as God. There aren't any men or women in the fifth world. That may be a great loss to you, it may not. But they're only sons of God. And we never talk like this because we're in the learning stages, going up, learning, learning, learning. But we're getting close to the fruition. And it may take quite some time, maybe in your illusory world, you'll call it 1,000 years. Maybe in your illusory world, it'll be 100 years or 5,000 years. But in truth, there will be no years. It won't be 100 or 1,000 or 5,000. It'll be reality attained. Illusion left behind. And I think it's so close that we talk about it now, although we haven't before. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. He will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. And God himself shall be with them and be their God." This is the end of separation. Whereas there was always a wall between you and God, or a seeming wall. God was always somewhere else, either far away or near, but not visible, not tangible. The wall is taken away. Separation is taken away. Do you know what it means? What happens when separation is taken away? You may think of it as blasphemy. What happens when I and the Father are one? Not two, one. Can you be one with God and still be a separate person? Does that mean you are God? Does that mean I and the Father are one? Or does it mean the Father is greater than I? We see Christ in the form of Jesus, and we think God is somewhere else. That would be two, wouldn't it? We say the Son of God. How would it be if you said, "He is God, and He is God, and He is God"? And how can there be a God and a Son if God is one? You understand your position a little better? That God is one. And when you see the new heaven and the new earth, you will realize that God is one. the God you have been searching for all your life, is all there is. Where does that leave a you? Each of us is the God of heaven. There's no separation. Each is God's son at this point. But as we rise in consciousness, each of us is equal with God. What does that mean? It means that we are one being. But if you are equal with God, and I am equal with God, and she is equal with God, and equal with God means we are one being, are we separate people? Are you and I separate? If we're equal with God, we're equal with each other. So what has happened? In this 21st chapter, John has realized no form. No form. Formless. And the word for that is incorporeality. He has realized the incorporeal nature of man. Well, you have no form, and you are one with the Father. And all that I have is thine. Can you see that you are much more than you anticipated? When we attain this level, and it seeps into our memory, and wherever we go, we don't lose that knowledge. If I am one with God, how can I act other than godlike? How can one who is one with God say, I feel sick, or I'm going to die, anything negative? He wouldn't be one with God, would he? And if he is so one with God that it's impossible to even think these things, let alone say them, can you imagine in your reality being of a nature that you cannot deny God because you'd be denying yourself? And yet, God's perfection is our perfection. And knowing this, because it's quite clear that it's true, why on a lower level would we tolerate imperfection there? When we know at the highest level, there's no imperfection possible. Why would we tolerate imperfection? Some say, well, we don't want to tolerate it, it just takes off by itself. It doesn't quite take off by itself. It needs someone who will permit it to take off by itself. Someone who gives quiet consent or is defeated before he starts. I am one with God, and that covers every level of my being. It's worth fighting for, to grimly know that I am one with God, and I stand on that fact in the quiet of my being. And the realization will come to me. I and the Father are one. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. It is not blasphemy. It is truth. We're not talking about this one who has negative thoughts about this, other thoughts that he or she is ashamed of. We're talking about the child of God who has overcome all of the human traits that are the negative thoughts. So let us stand up now and understand that I stand on my divine self. It is my understanding that I am divine. And I'm not going to go against my understanding and start being undivine. I'm not going to slit this fellow's throat. It's not my nature. I'm divine. Thoughts will not even cross your mind after a while. When you know you're divine, you will act divine. And you know that means a lot of change. Can't get mad at your neighbor and, oh, everything is ruled out. You live a divine life and that's all there is to it. If you're only 99%, you've still got to live a divine life and find that other 1%. I think we're being challenged. Look at my life. It must be divine because I am the image and likeness of my Father. And if it is divine, and I allow something non-divine to happen, well, that's as bad as a child in school hiding his friend's notebook or talking behind the teacher's back. We are divine and we're going to act it consciously. We act it through every circumstance. Now maybe the other fellow doesn't act divine. He comes over and he blacks your eyes and he steals your wallet. Or maybe he puts a knife in you. But you can see through the illusion, can't you? It hurts, but that's an illusion. In short, being divine, being Christ, is your protection, if protection is necessary, against anything, anyone. You simply are what you are. There's nothing in your life that can be detrimental to you because your life is the life of God. In our true reality, we are living the life of God. And this is what happens when there's a new earth and a new heaven. The life I was living, the mortal life, is no more. I'm now living the life of God. Of course, that new heaven, new earth, seems far off. We haven't reached that consciousness. But it isn't mentioned because it is unattainable. It's mentioned because it's inevitable. And it's advisable to think about it, to prepare, to know when it happens, I am prepared. And to work for the happening. The Bible is becoming clearer and clearer. It's a statement of ultimate truth. And we who know to some degree what it is saying and why would be foolish if we turned away and acted differently. Because our ultimate freedom lies in our knowing the truth of the Bible, within us as well as in the Bible. So let's examine a few more thoughts that he gives us. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. Presume that this had been in your consciousness, that the divine voice had said, Right, because these words are true and faithful. Could you contain yourself? Would you doubt them? Would you not quiver just in trying to reach for a pen to put it down? And what would you do if you heard it? Everything which John has put in this paragraph, what would you do if you had heard it? What did he do? To receive the words from this invisible source called God, to see the things he saw, to feel the rightness of them, he could never be a human being. He could hardly be seen by one person on the earth. And here he was, receiving words from the lips of God and knowing I am standing on the threshold of a new age, an invisible civilization, peopled by sons of God. There are no things. There's nothing in this world that can age. Nothing. Age is out of the world. There's no age. There's no one today who's older than yesterday or younger. There's no getting older. There's no age. It doesn't exist. You can be 100 years old or 2,000 years old or 5 million years old. You won't change your appearance, and your calendar doesn't show any increase in age. You are a spiritual being. We live in this magnificent, invisible universe. And then he speaks about Jerusalem, New Jerusalem, a new city. Which had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it. And the Lamb is the light thereof. That Lamb is within you. Can you imagine that the light of a city could come from that which shines from you? It will, because that light is the Christ light, and that which is within you is you, and that's all there is of you. And the Christ light at this point is free to shine without any obstruction. The fullness of your light is greater than the light of the sun. The sun must disappear because your light is too bright. And yet we look at it now, we can't find it. Maybe we find a touch of it in your eyes, a touch of it in the way you walk, something about your manner. But we don't even see a thimble full of light compared to what is. When the light of a city is the light of Christ in you and you and you, our light is superior to the light of the sun. Do you wonder about that, how that can be? That's what we are being prepared for. We won't be blinded by it. Our own light won't blind us. We won't have little eyes to look out with that could be blind. Wherever we go, we are the light which lights everything around us. Can you see any diseases in this light? When doctors in the world are giving their right eye right now to get a light of that boldness into the world. That light makes disease impossible. The very light of your being makes disease impossible. It also makes all the things that you try to accomplish disappear in the light, because they've all been accomplished. Everything you could possibly want to do, you've done. The light of you is the perfection of the domain of the Father. The universal light of you is impossible for anything to be wrong in that light. There's no place where anything can stand to be wrong. Everything is the perfect light of the Father. That's who we are. And to live up to it while in the flesh is difficult. But as we determine ourselves to be better and better and better, we find strange, wonderful things are happening. And that's because more of the light is getting through. You can't have a sore foot in the light. And so Jesus looks at a person. Oh, you were crippled. Of course, in the Christ light, you can't be a cripple. So you're not a cripple. The light is the Savior. The Christ light shines in the midst of you. And it brings the miracle of Christ to everything you do, say, and think. We'll see children in the new light. We'll see that they are the light as well as we are. Let's find the, not the center, but the glorious center. Let's stand there. Let your light shine. Let no thought cast a shadow.